So a very warm welcome to you, Monique Gauthier, on the other side of the planet to the Conscious Evolution Summit.
Thank you so much, Puri. I really appreciate being here.
Mm.
Very exciting what you're doing, gathering all these people that are pretty much reflecting that the world is changing, and it's basically an invitation to people like, come on board, let's work together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm loving that impetus.
And as we kind of just started to tap into, and then I had this impulse, let's just press the recording button because that might be interesting for our listeners and viewers also. Because what you shared, Monique, was that you really had the strong feeling and the strong knowing, I really need to wake up. It's really time. And maybe just share about that deep inner calling and longing and how it showed in you, how it registered in you, and what you did, what things you changed in order to kind of answer this inner calling.
All right. So yes, we were just talking about how you and I had that same kind of sense. And, you know, this is, gosh, how to describe it? You know, with humility, my kind of awakening came on the heels of kind of getting to that despair place, like, man, I have enough philosophy. I've been studying this since the 80s. I've done tons of workshops. I've read the books. I've been around the planet. I've taken students to spiritual eco-villages and got exposed to about as many awakened people as I could. And I still wasn't really feeling it in my body, you know, plenty in my head, but I didn't feel the, you know, what I was expecting could be a joyous breakthrough. And so I made an invocation. I just prayed for it. I just said, okay, I want to wake up. I want to wake up, God, you know, do whatever you can to wake me up, but, you know, don't hurt my kids, but, you know, I'll do whatever it takes. And then, shortly after that, everything in my life broke down. So and that's pretty common as I, you know, study more awakening, that for many people who are trying to make a kind of a vibrational shift like that, all things that were of the lower fields that don't quite fit your life anymore as you're trying to shift what it is that you are doing here in the end, those things shift away, be it, my gosh, it was everything. It was, you know, the home, work, you know, health, you know, things just kind of dismantled, and then have been reconstructing, and then kind of out of that, a certain kind of joy started to show up, like, and it almost felt like, I mean, I could feel my heart just opening and opening, and just feeling in love with everything, and that's, you know, been the last year or two, where it's, I used to feel waves of it would come and go. And then finally it became more like, wow, I'm feeling great all the time. I'm really loving existence. And I don't think it was Monique who did it. I think actually something came in and fixed my neurosynapses or something and my biochemistry, because it really, now I'm just almost surprised in how I just feel, so hopeful about the planet, so in love with our process, with this transition. I mean, I have plenty of friends here in North America that are very upset with politics, but and of course everything else, the environment and whatnot. And I'm a midwife by training, and so to me, it's very clear that this is just transition. And this analogy has been done before, but I used to think I came up with it, but it's basically the analogy of birth. And for me, I go right to about transition, maybe 8 centimeters of dilation when a woman is feeling nauseous and confused and doesn't think she can do it. And the head is a little asynclitic and it hurts and it just looks dire. And then there's throwing up and then it's just, you know, and to me it's like the present circumstances on our planet looks like a bunch of, you know, vomit. It looks like, wow, we're really getting to look at our inner yuckies. And it's an important phase. It's a phase of identifying all the isms, the sexism, the racism, and so on, so that we can say, like, are we over this, folks? Are we done with not seeing each other as a one unit, you know, one little marble, a one brotherhood. Can we just, you know, grow up now? And so, so I'm actually, you know, as a midwife, just seeing like, okay, the baby's coming. You know, we're just a few hours away from it. It looks dire. It looks terrible. It smells bad. But actually, we're about to have a baby. And at this point, you know, what is really needed in that room, in that time, is just cheerleading. It's just, hooray, yes, what's the vision? The baby's coming. We're going to be holding this baby. We're going to be breastfeeding. We're going to be in love. And so to me, where we are right now in culture is we need to invoke more of the vision. Like, what does a happy planet look like? You know, what is it that when we handle the plastic in the ocean and we handle the violence that's going on in various countries in a way, you know, what are we aspiring to? And the more that we can hold that vision, we know the metaphysics of this, the more we're moving into it. And it's kind of like we're downloading it. So I'm advocating more for people to go for their joy, because I think it's from that joy that we can start really seeing, you know, what we want to create, because we are creators. So, you know, out of chaos, I think we're just starting to learn, you know, how do we create? And, you know, we want to create beauty, you know. And so I'm just chock-a-block full of enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's really, in your opinion, it's really a lot about focusing in the which world do we want to see? Which world do we really want to live in and hold that in our hearts, in our field?
Yeah, I think that became real clear to me. It was back during, it was during one of the, what was it? It was one of the wars and way back when, and people were in the streets and Afghanistan, I think it was. And I think I was hearing reverberations from the Dalai Lama, maybe even Mother Teresa, saying that, you know, it's not so much what we're saying no to, you know, it's more so what are we saying yes to? And I started working with, I was working with university students and also with high school students. And I remember one class, I said, okay, let's get out our art supplies and draw the positive vision of the future. Let's really think about what could this planet look like? And let's get excited about that. And so I'm wanting to kind of beat that drum, you know, to say, okay, everybody, let's think positive, but more so let's get really enticed by the possible. It is possible that we will make it through this bottleneck, as we call it, ecologically, blah, blah, and that we will get to the other end. Now what, you know, what does it look like to be everybody embodied in our fourth chakra, you know, in our hearts, behaving and having our minds coordinated with that, you know, coherent. What does it look like? And where we're really seeing everybody as pretty much a interdependent commingling and really enjoying that interdependency.
Mm-hmm. And Monique, I'm also interested when we really look at the process of giving birth to a baby. I mean, I also have two almost grown up kids. But when I remember back, it's really a delicate process of surrendering and being active. Uh-huh. So it has really this both parts of yes, deep surrender and also all of your powers, all what you are, is asked kind of to bring into this process. And how would you translate that into our situation now?
Fantastic. Wow. So let me just go back a little bit. So in birth, there, you know, many people experience pain and it's, you know, quite terrible in many ways, because there's a lot of fear. And it's actually an opportunity for a rite of passage that would take women to a whole different level, because there's an opportunity for them to go deeper into trust in the face of fear, to go deeper into self-love in the face of fear. And I see people who actually set themselves up for birth. I've been coaching people to do this for a long time now. Set yourself up for birth that actually this is an opportunity to fall in love with yourself and with life and with your baby, you know, as you're birthing, and no matter the sensation, that you will move through it with grace. And so people do their hypnobirthing, or they do their 10-day Vipassana sit, or they do their mindfulness, and they bring that all those skills into birth, and then birth becomes very grace-filled. I actually support women who decide not even to have medical care and deliver their own babies, and they're doing it with, you know, like I have done that with my second baby, doing that kind of free birthing, totally in trust, you know, between you and your God, and it's filled with grace. And so as I look at this birth, where you're talking about the two places where you're maybe 90% of birth is kind of receptive. You're receiving the waves of contraction. And then the last part, the last hour or two, then it is time to push the baby out. And you may feel compelled to push the baby out, and you are active. So it's kind of a lot of yin, and then you're going into yang. So, you know, there's those two. So in the process of awakening, you know, I've actually thought about this, like, so I'm a longtime student of A Course in Miracles, and what they talk about is that you are the one who asks for salvation, who creates salvation. You know, salvation meaning, you know, get liberated from your very painful mind, chaotic mind. So you initiate, you ask the great all, the divine, like, yes, I want to awaken to who I really am. I want to move forward. I'll do what I need to do to clear up those blockages, which is basically the ego resisting life, you know, resisting things as they are, the ego not wanting to, you know, be present and love, you know, and all of it, those manipulations. So you bring yourself forward, you start kind of invoking that. I used to take students to Oroville under the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. And the mother had a quote about waking up, which was, first there's aspiration. So we would aspire to, oh my gosh, I'm just starting to wake up, and I'm noticing that there is this possibility of actually being a happier human, of actually loving my existence. And I'm aspiring to that. After that, which you would say would be renunciation, I'm renouncing the parts of me that are saying, no, I don't want that. Or secretly, you know, subconsciously, and you start, you know, the process of awakening is basically dismantling those limiting beliefs, those conditioned places in your mind from childhood and from culture, and, you know, just kind of undoing that. And that is an act of participation. But I think as you reach up, much like that, that painting where God has the finger down at man, there is this kind of a reaching towards the divine, and the divine reaches back and says, okay, you asked for it, you get it. And so as you're saying, I'm willing, and you're lifting your clouds of, you know, despair and disbelief, a lot of this is about removing doubt. You know, is there a God? Am I that God? Do I belong to it? It's kind of removing that and then allowing the divine to kind of prove to you, yes, this is a trustworthy universe. This is a good universe. I support you in love. Thanks for removing some of those blocks. And you start seeing evidence of that in your life, you know, in your circumstances, in your outer life. So, you know, it is that renunciation. And then the last part she would say is unification. That's when finally you and the divine are kind of, you're allowing love to be your identity. You're allowing yourself to just be listening to that intuitive field and responding to that very gracefully. Mm-hmm. So I do think yin and yang, I do think it's part of you bring yourself forward. And I do think it's the divine that says, okay, now that you've decided it's time to start ascending, coming back up, you know, we descend into form and then we say, okay, now I want to go home. You know, it's that coming back up. That we kind of choose at a certain point. And it looks like free will, but I suspect it's not also, because I suspect the whole thing is divine. And at some point, you know, it's basically we are acorns who at some point become trees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a beautiful, beautiful metaphor. Yeah. And I'm also interested because you also said that there was this feeling that you really want to embody this what you are awakened to? And I mean, there are so many different facets of awakening and levels where we can awaken to, basically. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, it's also a kind of a ongoing deepening, awakening.
So widening.
Mm-hmm. Expanding.
Yeah.
And in your experience, what supported you in this process and still supports you in really living that in your humanness, in your physical body?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as far as, you know, I mean, there's just a plethora of ways to support awakening. And, you know, everything from the daily practice, you know, the meditation in the morning is probably one of the better ways. For me, it was using the affirmations of A Course in Miracles, which was really kind of helping me to get rid of a lot of the waters I was swimming in culturally, and the Judeo-Christian waters of guilt and those kind of things. So that helped me kind of remove that. So basically getting up in the morning and connecting to the heart and connecting to all beings, may all beings be happy, kind of prayer right from the get-go. So set up the day right. So I if you look at all mystics, it's basically they start their day off with a moment of connection. And so, however to set up a daily practice where you are getting up in the morning, you remember the divine before you touch your phone, before you touch, you know, touch coffee and whatnot. I believe in mnemonics, you know, remembering, because basically we're in a state of forgetting. So having an altar in your room is reminding you, having things around you that are reminding you of the divine, of your connection. And I know that some of the blockages, the things getting in is in the subconscious. So the way we modify the subconscious is through repetition. So you could learn techniques of self-hypnosis. You can listen to hypnotic tapes that kind of get you into deeper states of trust and well-being. Other things that help is, you know, is knowledge, lots of Ajna yoga, lots of learning about how the mind and body are connected, what are happening with the neurosynapses, what's happening when we meditate, you know, the prefrontal cortex is thickening, you know, the amygdala is not, receptors are not receiving those signals so much, so your autonomic system is becoming more relaxed and what it feels like to be at rest. One of my favorite quotes from A Course in Miracles is, "I rest in God." Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a kind of a restful, trustful state. So you kind of know your where you're going. Another great statement is, the goal is God. So that keeps the mind focused. So you're trying to remember and stay focused. So those kind of mantras are helpful. So of course, mantras, in your daily practice, you're constantly practicing keeping your emotions elevated. So I like that book, Power Versus Force. Do you know that, where he uses kinesiology in this book, and he looks at different emotional states and the lower chakra states, like at the very bottom, you know, shame and unworthiness, and then moving up the scale, you know, through guilt and fear and anger, and then up to hopelessness, and then, you know, and then you're moving up into kind of hope and then you know, the very top, you'd have, you know, love and joy and peace, and then, you know, Satchitananda, bliss. And so what you're trying to do is trying to lift out of those dire emotions as a habit, because again, we're working with the subconscious, get out of an addiction. Our bodies are addicted. We are addicted to our misery. That's what the ego likes to do, to stay put in misery. So get out of that habit and start moving into the habit of gratitude. Start moving into the habit of thinking thoughts.
And maybe really looking deeply there. I mean, it's fast said. It's, you know, you just move and you go there. But when your unconscious ego is really in this addictive state of repeating it and believing it and really also making you feel that it's true, what supported you then to make this shift, to kind of really bring more weight onto the other side that it's really shifting? Is it then repetition? Is it continuation? Is it sharing with others? Or what supported you in that?
Mm-hmm. Well, my whole adult life, I've lived in intentional communities. So I've lived surrounded by spiritual people who really believed in making sure their karma was going to be on the good side. And so it was wonderful to be surrounded by people who had the same intention to be in that field. Very, very, very helpful. You know, Buddha says, I take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And so Sangha is your community. So being in a field of consciousness that's elevated helps. That would be one thing. So you're watching other people try to make themselves happy with their thoughts. And so you're actually entrainment, right? You're trying to entrain each other into, you know, how do I stop gossiping or stop self-hatred or, you know, and watching other people strive towards that. That's key. And now we don't have to live in intentional communities. Thanks to Zoom and Skype and all the communicating we're doing, which I think is the training wheels to higher consciousness, is the internet. And we are learning, like I hold a couple of different, spiritual groups, over Zoom, and I've done a few this year, and I'm amazed at group consciousness, how it really does really support rapid awakening. You're seeing how everybody else is doing it, and it's giving you a lot of tips as to how to get off it and start moving in that direction. And I just think the aspiration, I think the burning passion to just cut it out, to just get to the good place in your consciousness, I think that you really do get support. Because many times when I've had blockages, let's say one example was somebody had done me wrong, and I was in a state of hatred and a state of revenge. You know, when I meditated very deeply, all I could feel is like, no, I really would like to inflict revenge on this person, you know, like this. And at that point, you know, that very deep state is like, I can't seem to access, you know, happy, wishing them well. And so I reached up. I said, hey, you know, God, could you just, I'm at the end of my spiritual IQ here. Could you just help me? And I sat there for another couple of hours. And this was during a time in my life where when my daughter had just gone off to kindergarten. So I would meditate for like 6 hours a day, and I was sitting on this chair and I would just, you know, disappear into bliss. But during that time, this wrong had happened in my life. And so it was an opportunity to see like, okay, does this stuff really work? If you reach out to the divine, you get help when you're at your wit's end. And so I was at the wit's end. And so I sat there for another hour or two and just, you know, blank minded, just trying not to think about my hatred, but in a state of asking. And all of a sudden, and I didn't even expect this, I started seeing images of this other person that I had a grievance against. And I saw that, you know, that first of all, that I was the source of bringing that person into my life, that, you know, I am the source of my life and everything showing up of it, I am responsible to it. And so I was seeing how, and I saw the misery that that person was in and how we both kind of were trapped in this theater. And mm-hmm. And then energetically, I just started feeling my heart open up. I just like, oh, I get it. Like everybody's innocent, you know, we're both innocent and he's really innocent. And it lifted, but it wasn't me, you know, could make that breakthrough. You know, I was still pretty much stuck in victim persecutor. And so as far as lifting emotions, you know, we don't have to do it ourselves. You know, we have each other, and that's what we're doing. We're moving out of the Piscean age where you think, you know, Jesus knows better, you know, Buddha knows better, and they're leading us. And we're moving into group consciousness, into, you know, they say it takes about 200 years and we've got another 100 years to go here, but before we're full Aquarian. And Aquarian is really about, I think Thich Nhat Hanh said, the next Buddha is the Sangha. Next Buddha is the community. So it's this group mind that we're learning how to think together and to employ each other to uplift. And so not only are we doing it on the planet, just us humans, but also I think we are doing it with external beings. Mm-hmm. And so the reaching out is available to us, but we are the ones to ask for it. And so as far as getting out of stuck, dark feelings and moving up, to try to get to answer your question here, it's compassion for ourselves. It's really like, wow, I'm feeling dark. I'm not looking pretty. I'm feeling rageful. I'm feeling angry. I feel depressed. I feel anxious. And just to look at it, look it in the face and say, wow, this is really going on. And that's, I feel compassion for that. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not a broken, my soul can never be broken, but my human self is having trouble.
But there is already, when I listen to that, there is already an awareness where you can step out of this identification, what is happening to you and what you feel, where you're already able to look at it from a bit from a distance.
Right, right. So that's, you know, just a little bit of the way you have to have enough awareness to say, you know, to not be overtaken by rage. And, you know, rage will overtake us, you know, at a certain place, and sadness will come, and these things will happen. And they're honorable. They are part of the process. We need these right now. The period right now that we have of crisis, of hating who we've been as oil mongers, you know, this is, you know, we have to have compassion for ourselves. We didn't know any better. We, you know, this is what we do with cars. You know, this is, we just spew stuff out in the air, you know, that's, but so just have compassion and have that awareness that this is what it's been like to be that human. And as we let her rip, the question then becomes, how fast do you get back on the horse? After you've said something really nasty to somebody, how fast do you say, oh gosh, let me correct myself here. I really messed up. And then how fast do you say, like, okay, did it one more time. Obviously, there's some really old stuff that I'm really trying to peel apart, and I'm going to have to go through this a few more times, or maybe not. If I really get it, maybe this karma will, this sankara will burn off, and I won't have to repeat this lesson again, or this learning. Not that lessons are punitive, but more so it's like you really want to understand how it is that you are love. And then when, and so here in the land of duality, you know, black and white, when you're not being loved, that has value too. That is honorable also. So it starts with compassion. It starts with awareness of what's going on. And then you can start as you forgive, as you, you know, what are definitions for forgiveness? As you let it go, as you surrender it. As forgiveness means knowing that you are not essentially bad, that you're not your personality, that, you know, you are intact, you're sinless, there's nothing wrong with you. You could, you know, you're never affected by, you're not identified with your emotions. As you forgive that and allow it to just drop away very sweetly, very gently, then you can move into, from a state of compassion and forgiveness for yourself, then the energies start to move. Then, you know, the part that wanted attention from you is able to relax a bit. You know, the tears do end up stopping, or the screaming does stop, or the depression starts looking a little bit more hopeful, and you do start to mount. And again, community. So you reach out, you know, you try not to stay isolated, especially, you know, in sadness, many of us hide, but, you know, reach out to people who love you, you know, pick up the phone and say, I am not doing well. Can you just listen to me? And that's amazing how we can really support each other. Mm-hmm. So those things help to break through, and then just keep that burning desire to learn the thing that you're trying to learn, to be responsible for it, to have the power of saying, I'm at the source of this stuff showing up. Doesn't mean I'm bad. Doesn't mean I'm to blame. It just means this is showing up in my life because there's something here. From the soul level, I'm wanting me to learn. It lifts and it lifts. Mm-hmm. And then to have this faith, I think faith at the top, you know, like that eventually you these habits of these emotional habits that are very painful, they're not going to visit so frequently. Eventually they'll dissipate. Eventually the addiction will melt away. And in that faith and keeping your eye on, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel, when we are more established in joy, that this work actually does work, and to keep that faith. Did I get to that question?
Yeah, in a way, what I also get, I mean, you didn't mention it really, but you made space also for it. You made gaps in your life. You made gaps in your busyness to kind of, there already was another order in your priority in a way, I would say. Yeah. So.
Oh, wow. Thanks for underlining that. Yeah. I want to underline that for everybody that, you know, the crazy busyness of our world is really missing the mark. First of all, I don't believe that we should be working 40 hours and plus a week. Original peoples only worked 20 hours and included laundry and food, and that our beings need space and silence and quiet and walking in the fields, and, you know, and especially in this time of transition, you know, some of us need lots of naps, you know, some of us need a cup of tea, you know, and the culture that we come from really derives identity from doing. So I'm a good girl if I do lots of stuff and I prove my worth. And that story needs to go, you know, the Puritan story needs to go. We need to get to, you know, higher values. So the higher value is if I really work on being peaceful and understanding myself, and for however many hours, days, weeks, months, years it takes to get that thing to start to have the automatic responses not be reactions but responses, you know, thoughtful responses, that work has value. That work needs time and dedication and quiet and removal from, you know, embellishing my identity with great career moves, you know, to, if we could get a culture that really valued that, and then the contribution, you know, so like the mother was saying, you know, first you have the aspiration, then you have the renunciation, and then you have the unification. And she said, don't even try service till you get the unification. Don't, you know, and I would say that it's kind of more of a melding. You know, you want to give up yourself to this world. You want to make a difference. But actually, you'll probably make a more profound difference if you handled your stuff. And you've given it the time that it takes. And I'm thinking it takes... For those of us of this generation, it's taken us a long time. There's a lot of crud that needed to be cleared up. I do think, and as a midwife, and so I've seen, you know, for the last 30 years, I've seen couples, you know, 30 years ago, the fathers and the mothers, the way they were being, and those children that were being born are very different than what we have now. Really different in consciousness. So the babies are different and the parents are different. But
tell a bit more. So okay. Highlight the difference in the parents and in the babies.
right. So, but let me just say that, that the bridging generation, those bridging from, you know, we're children of the 1950s and 60s and having a lot to clean up around, like we're still doing major cleanup right now around old habit thoughts of victim persecutor, and bridging over to like, can we just get to joy and creativity? You know, to be the parents that are doing that, you know, they're more wholesome parents. They're not so broken as we were. And so the kids of those, like I used to run this club for little 6-year-olds in my neighborhood called they call themselves the Love Club. And we do all sorts of goofy exercise. I try to get the ideas across of unity. So one game would be, I put them in a little pile, you know, about a half a dozen of them, put a white blanket. And I said, okay, now huddle up together. And they'd huddle together. And I said, now you're all wonderful and you're oneness and you're in the light and you're in the ball of light. And they're loving that. And then I said, then something happens, boom. And I take the white blanket off and I say, now scurry to the four directions. And they'd run off to the four directions. And then I'd ask them, what does that feel like? And they would get in touch with, you know, those feelings of separation. And those children who were 6 back then are about 19 now. And what I'm noticing in them is, my gosh, they have the consciousness that took me years to get. Those teenagers got it. They understand it's about, you know, love, not fear. They understand that this is what the ego does. And they got that stuff. So that's that generation. Now, even more so, the kids that are being born now, if you look at how the fathers are being involved versus, let's say, 30 years ago, the fathers know, we all know the psychology of dads that don't show up. So these men are present. And they think of the present as the pregnancy, not as her pregnancy, but as our pregnancy. And they are speaking to the babies. And, you know, they're risking, like in as a midwife, so I did home birth midwifery for about 20-some years, and then I did Ontario, Canadian, regulated medical midwifery for the last 4 years. So I've been able to see different kinds of clients and different kinds of ways of thinking. But the clients that I had before, you know, at the very beginning, what do I want to say about that? I mean, I just lost my train of thought. But more so, what I'm noticing now is that the understanding that of, let's say, epigenetics, that how we're treating ourselves in utero and even two generations back is actually reflecting on the genes of the kids coming now. So we know the men need to show up, and they are. And in the birth room, more and more I'm seeing them be responsible for, let's say, the affirmations that the woman is using during her labor, and that the quality of how they are perceiving the woman is actually, like, it's amazing. That itself is transformative, how to presence each other. But that's because they have embodied presencing. So many, you know, many men. I'm not saying it's everybody. I'm saying, but I am seeing, you know, these forerunners, you know, so babies who are born to that, and you know, this is where we can get into ideas of indigo kids and crystal kids and rainbow kids. And I do have a belief that that is happening, that we are seeing people come in from more elevated states of being. But just if we're to remove some of that woo-woo and just talk about what it's like to be a child raised by a father who sees them, who values them, who speaks to them with respect. And the word respect, respectare, you know, to see the spirit in somebody, to look again and to look at their spirit. You know, when we have that kind of respect in our families, then those children are growing up with power. And unhappiness is a state of powerlessness, of not feeling power. So power comes from, you know, your heart, and your top connection is intact. And so if you have a family dynamic, a system where the two parents are presencing from their own wholeness, of course the kid is going to show up loving, being alive and creative and joyous. And we are seeing more of that as our psychology becomes more refined. Long answer.
Beautiful. Yeah. And, I mean, I also know that you are also very passionate and engaged in community, where it's about really birthing not just kids, but really a new culture, a new way of being together, a new way of creating or imagining and making action towards that. Mm-hmm. And in your experience, what would you say? I mean, it's difficult to put it in to address it general, because every community is also different, like we all as individuals are different. But what would you say, where do you see is kind of the edge of communities where you can see there's really a difference in their way of living, of acting, than in the mainstream society?
Yeah. Wow. Yes, I do have a passion for community and understanding how groups learn together. My husband is the president of the Global Eco Village Network, and you just interviewed him, Daniel Greenberg. And he and I met in college in Minnesota when we were working for a nonprofit, it's volunteers, called the Continuum Center, which is an affiliate of Noetic Science. So it was doing research on consciousness. So Dan and I came together with this passion for, you know, what is consciousness and how is it affecting community? I ended up getting an NEA grant to go around to intentional communities in North America and videotape and make a film about, you know, where the hippies had landed in communes and communities and what had happened to them. And this was during that time that I really started to you know, as a 24-year-old, embody a lot of those ethics and learn a lot of those skills that they were very refined at, you know, communication, you know, decision-making that's done fairly. And so in the, so what I've learned from being so exposed to community living in Findhorn and in Auraville is that there is a deep concern for the process that we are engaged in, let's say the process of a decision making, that process is a sacred process and that everybody needs to be honored in it. And so it's not about kind of engaging the police or a government kind of aggression towards each other and trying to make decisions, although that of course shows up in community, but more so it is this remembering process where we are honoring how it is that we are talking to each other, how it is that we are learning to listen. And so I think that listening is like, and it's quite the skill, and I certainly don't have mastery over it, but it really is just trying to understand where other people are coming from and to respect it. And so to be in that in community field of that kind of respect and listening and honoring and knowing that everybody has a little piece of that elephant, you know, somebody's holding the tail, and everybody has something to contribute. You know, if you're in a corporation, it's not, you know, even the janitors have something to say about what's going on here, and to just include everybody. And so when I left my wonderful hippie home birth practice, where I was embedded in my community and really loving seeing these children grow up and was surrounded with people with positive words. And then I went into government regulated midwifery in hospital setting. That was a shock to me. It was a shock to see, like, oh, and I used to call it the field of fear. You know, everybody's afraid of being sued. And if you look at the structure of that system, it's that let's say the client or the pregnant woman, that things were being done not necessarily for her benefit, but to protect the hospital from you know, financial problems. And so then the behaviors of the individuals kind of had to, you know, people had to do extra covering their bums kind of thing, writing down, annotating every word she said when she went to the bathroom, you know, versus, you know, all that documenting, which is done on computer and by hand now, is distracting from actually presencing the woman, which is really what's going to make the thing go lovely. So if a woman's in labor or somebody is sick and you are giving them your heartfelt presence and attention and love and listening, and then things go well.
But that means, sorry that I interrupt you, but that means already that you really need to be aware that you want to bring the focus really to this person and to what's happening, rather than just fulfilling some structures which are made up from fear-driven motivation, basically.
So, you know, and I have faith that those systems, as we mature and we're seeing indications of it, like now we, you know, there's softenings, like where we do recommend men, even in the hospital, take their shirt off and hold their naked newborn on them at least for half an hour. We've done the research, like, wow, it really increases bonding for the man, and the baby, you know, takes in the smells of his father, and there's more connection there. And so we are seeing some of those things are happening. More breastfeeding is happening. Those awareness is happening. And so the systems are becoming more humane, but the intelligence isn't quite there yet. The wisdom, you know, so wisdom is a kind of a heartfelt intelligence, the wisdom of what really serves people, that still needs some work. Mm-hmm. And so your original question is, what was it like to go from community to
a ministry? And I'm also interested, I mean, sometimes you can look at those community-like kind of islands somewhere, and I'm also interested, I mean, how can we bring what the wisdom which is there and the learning which is there, how can this really influence the spaces also out of community? How can this Yeah, I also was in Auroville. I wasn't there really long. I don't know so much about it, but it also looked like a bit like an island in India. Not really totally merging with everything around. And I'm also interested in what you think, what supports that process where it has a relevance and an influence and a benefit, not just in the field, in the community itself.
Right. So I think of communities as incubators. I think of them as, you know, sites where it's kind of a demonstration site, you know, be it for ecological reasons or for how governing reasons or whatever. So they are insular. But many, you know, many communities like the one that where I lived in Massachusetts, Sirius community, we ended up buying a house across the street from the community. And many, many ex-community folks had bought those. So the thing had expanded into the neighborhood. And we had a big listserv for the whole township where we would communicate back and forth, like who's got a lawnmower or whatever. And there was sharing, and there was, so that flavor of belongingness had extended into our little tiny town. Now, did it extend into the bigger city 10 minutes away? Little bits of it had extended. So communities are doing their best to become, you know, good neighbors and incorporate more and more of the locals. And so in that incubation, there has been this long period of how do we communicate to each other with compassion and effectively. Those, all the different, and how do we create a sustainable energy systems, all sorts of things that were learned in community, those are being shared. And so now, and what I'm seeing is, you know, in my peers who've been in community for a long time, many are leaving and bringing that into programs and projects outside the community. So they travel around the world and they hold different workshops. And so they are embedded in that ethos of care. Mm-hmm. So how do we bring more and more of that together? Well, I like I said, I think Zoom calls are like an amazing way of seeing each other and having that communication of how it is that we are growing. Mm-hmm. And to kind of compare and contrast before with each other and learn from each other. So that's one way to do more bringing that into the world. And then it becomes kind of like, how does it get into our institutions? How does it get into our schools and our governments and our hospitals? And you know, I used to teach in schools about mindfulness and to little kids. So I know that there are teachers out there that are dying to bring more and more of that. And it is happening all over the world now. More of that is getting into the system. Teachers are learning, you know, and mindfulness also. So I think those vibes are happening. As the systems are crumbling and will be reinventing themselves, I think that will support the greater culture. And I think actually, I think Donald Trump is a saint because he's bringing so much clarity, and we need clarity as to what has value and what do we really believe and how are we going to take a stand for what we really believe and how are we going to do it in our systems and our structures and things that they're obviously on crumbly legs and need to be rebooted in different and creative and beautiful ways. So just a nod to what we think looks like chaos and Kali at our best is actually just the beginnings of good stuff ahead.
And I received this image when I'm listening to you, Monique, like kind of a piece of a garden, and there you have the seeds of the plants, and then comes the wind and all the seeds are kind of flying in the air and they're mixed and they don't know where they go and where they land and what will grow. But I just received this image when you were sharing that.
Yeah. So then it remains just, you're aiming for trust. You're aiming for trust in the universe. So, actually, when I'm teaching people, I say, you know, pick one thing you want to focus on you know, in your spiritual development, and just keep at that, whatever the word is. So for me in the beginning, it was, you know, happiness. I wanted to know everything about happiness. And then after that, it was like inner peace, because of Course in Miracles is just saying the goal is inner peace. And that one was really helpful. I could focus all my energies, like, what would it be like to have inner peace? Another place that another word that I find really important is trust. You know, it's the foundation of what they call the teachers of God. And of Course in Miracles is that if we can have trust in this universe as being friendly, Einstein said, when asked by a journalist, what's the most important question? Einstein says the most important question is this a friendly universe? So if we can get our psyches to trust that all is good, you know, that we are good, and to go deeper and deeper. And then as we bring that focus, the universe actually starts proving that in circumstances. And as we relax and we are trusting that all is well, more beauty starts to arise. You know, you're talking about soil and leaves and everything. I mean, if you stamp down on the plant and you're trying to control it, there's not enough air, you know, there's not enough sun, and the water can't come into the soil and nourish those seeds. So we do need this kind of spacious, graceful holding.
Mm-hmm. And Monique, I'm also curious because you also shared that you are in the process of writing a book. Mm-hmm. Do you want to share a bit what it's about and what's the process and where you are with it?
Right. So this book has been in my heart for a very, very long time. And it's an invitation to families, mothers and fathers, to take on pregnancy, birth, postpartum, and beyond, as an opportunity for awakening. And so what I want to describe is all of those different phases using stories that I have had over the years of where we meet the emotional field and where there's breakdown and how to uplift ourselves through it, you know, as we're making decisions around the pregnancy or the birth, or where it is that we are confronting fear because it is a rite of passage, and how do we move through that fear. And to just, you know, keep that awareness so wide open during this big transition in life, so that all the lessons can come forward with clarity, and that we actually have the skills to meet them, and that serves how we're going to be raising this next generation. So this next generation, you know, is coming into quite the soup, and we want them to be really skillful. We want them to be ablaze with energy to make a difference. And so they need the parenting that is really clear and clear within them, their own selves. So to me, it's an obvious thing that now we need to work with parents, and we need to work with how we treat babies and how we treat little kids. Because we know the first 7 years of a child's life, is their minds are sponges and their subconscious is wide open. Their brain waves are slower and they're just ingesting, you know, the sins of the father, you know, or the, you know, the word sin means missing the mark, you know, the places where we're not being loved. So all of that is being absorbed. So we need to address that. If we're going to have a happy world, we need to make sure that those kids are getting messages in those first 7 years and from conception and preconception all the way through, that they're getting the message that you are love. Mm-hmm. Regardless of what you're seeing outside in the world, and that the world is in a time of transition, thank you for coming. So whenever a baby is born, I always say, welcome, we're so glad you're here. Because that's the message we need to have. And to be empowered, to feel enough energetic oomph to deal with problems, to move through them. And start to plant that garden of a world that is now moving on from darker places to places of creativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in a way, what you do, Monique, is that you already take care of beings which aren't born yet, but in preparing the land, when you would say there are seeds which will come, and you help preparing the land with the parents, that the seeds have really a good soil where they can land and then grow.
Yeah, and we have plenty of research to prove it now. You know, epigenetics is looking at how important it is for, let's say, in utero, that baby to be immersed in waters that are not full of cortisol, but full of beautiful hormones that are enhancing and feel good.
Mm-hmm. And do you then also have groups with where you work with parents? How does it look like practically?
I'm wanting to do more and more work online so I can reach more and more people. And so in December, I'll have a small group of parents that are interested in this idea of how to wake themselves up while they're pregnant. And I also have another group in January. And so I'm wanting to get this message out more. And then do counseling for parents. So many parents come together, they fall in love, and it's a great time to make a baby, maybe a couple years later, because you're still kind of in love. And then usually after the first or second baby, you know, many of those relationships do start to break down, because a baby is a ball of needs. And if you haven't learned the language as to how to represent your own needs to your partner, everybody's coming from scarcity. And so then you can't feel the love anymore. And so relationship is disintegrating. So we need kids to be in families that, where parents know how to cooperate and move with each other around. Everybody gets their needs met as best as we can. And so that requires communication skills. It requires self-investigation. It requires a commitment to togetherness through the hard times. And it doesn't mean everybody has to stay together married or anything like that, but it does mean that everybody's being as conscious as they can. And so I like to work with couples, online, and that way I can reach more people around and we can get this idea more. So I'm actually, I'm dreaming into, if I to be, take a risk here, I'm dreaming into a world that, where there is a culture that so understands how important it is for a woman to feel safe in pregnancy and to feel loved, and for the man to feel connected to his child and to his partner, and that we have awareness around how we are bringing in new souls on this planet. And that my vision is that we're bringing in new souls with consciousness full tilt all across the board.
Mm-hmm. And there is really awareness how important it is what you are being in your daily life, in how you are when you move through your day, basically that everything, what you do, what you think, what you feel makes an impact, and that you kind of can take care and be responsible for what is happening in you, and then for how you bring that into your environment, into your relationship, into your family.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And like I said, those first years, the kids are absorbing everything, the feeling of well-being, if a woman or a man, they really love themselves, they really love how they are in life, that is the big lesson the kid is taking on. Mm-hmm. And so we want to get people to that place.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Thank you so much for taking this initiative and spending bringing your energy, your time, your wisdom, what you've learned, and share that and contribute in that. Thank you so much, Monique.
Well, thank you. It's quite a blessing.
Yeah. And I will share your website link. I guess when you have courses like that, people could find it on your website.
I have two courses or groups, Zoom groups coming up in December, starting at the first week of December. So one for individuals that are waking up and want to talk about it. So it's more of a kind of a community feeling. It's not a guru talking to, but more so, maybe a facilitator asking how it is that we are doing these things so that we are learning from each other.
And how often will you meet them?
So in December, it's once a week. So mm-hmm. Three times once a week. And then I'll do it again for six times starting in January. So two different classes or groups. So that's for individuals that are interested in this question of awakening. What is it? How do we do it? Where am I in my process? And to be sharing with each other. And then the other one is specific to parents, and I'd love to invite couples to come so that the couples get a chance to deepen into their relationship and to look at questions before babies get here and to prepare their pregnancy and their birth so that the birth has as much grace as possible, regardless of whatever birth choices they're making, but more so to be very, you know, women make beautiful choices during birth when they're very connected to what they need, who they are. And so I want to foster and nurture that connection to their inner authority, mm-hmm. their inner teacher. And so anyway, so December, those two classes, and I'll repeat it again in January, twice as long.
Mm-hmm. And do you also still bring groups to communities? Is this still something you do? Or
yeah, so my husband is has a program called CAPE, Custom Academic Programs in Eco Villages, Daniel Greenberg. And so he's been facilitating universities and education systems to bring their students to these eco villages. And also there's a program that is being run for gap year students, taking students to Oroville starting February of 2019. So that's happening. And Eco Villages is just an incredible place to go for rapid spiritual growth.
Great. Thank you so much, Monique, for
thank you for
your love, your passion, your wisdom to this summit and taking care of this, for me, really important field of bringing more awareness and awakening into this task and context in our life and parenting. I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good world. We are. In my imagination, it already is.
You know? Yes. Yeah, all the best to you, Monique, to you, to your husband, your family, your project, and thank you for being
part. Thank you, Pyria. Thank you for doing this work. Thank you for getting the word out that this is a time of transition and that we need to really, you know, putting out the call to get on board, you know, like, let's do this together. And that's what I'm hearing you're putting out, and how do we do this? And efforts like this, very, very great blessing. Mm.